is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
1945. It is March, late winter, early spring of 1945. And a flight of B-29s goes out from the islands in the Pacific towards Tokyo. The ambition is to burn Tokyo the night of the March 9th into the 10th. That is an expression of the power of the American U.S. Army Air Force late in the war. Germany is still in the contest, but Japan is burning. A man who learns about this mission within hours of its success, the burning of Tokyo, is Henry Louis Stimson, the Secretary of War. Henry Louis Stimson forms the point of view, the moral high ground point of view, in a new book, The Road to Surrender, Three Men and the Countdown to the End of World War II. I welcome the distinguished author, Evan Thomas, to comment on who Henry Stimson is at this point in his life. He has served several presidents, most importantly, Franklin Roosevelt. But at this point, he's also weighed down by the demands of his office and his own health issues. Evan, congratulations and good evening. What do we understand about Henry Stimson at this point in his life, the least of which being that he's a Victorian gentleman? Good evening to you, Evan.
Hi, good evening to you, John. Henry Stimson is a morally upright person. He sees himself that way. He calls himself a Christian gentleman, and he is. He goes to church on Sunday. He has a moral vision. He believes in what he calls the law of moral progress. He believes that the United States is the country best suited, really, in the history of the world to achieve this moral perfection, if you will. But at the same time, and this is crucial, Henry Stimson is a realist. He's a power guy. He was a prosecutor. He was a New York lawyer. He's been Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense. He wanted the United States to stand up to fascism in the 1930s when nobody else did. He's been an interventionist all the way. So he is both a moralist who believes in a fairly benign Christian God, and at the same time, he is a guy who believes in the use of power, the necessity of power. He's comfortable with power. Now, why is this relevant? He's at a juncture in history, the end of World War II, where we're about to finish off Germany, but Japan remains. And Japan is obdurate and unwilling to surrender. And what's going to make them surrender? Well, on the night you mentioned in March 1945, B-29s are raining firebombs on Tokyo. More people died on March 10th, 1945, and I believe a 12-hour period, than have ever died in the history of any battle in warfare, 100,000 people. And Stimson is not absolutely happy about that. The idea that we're burning these Japanese cities, he wants to end the war, but he has moral qualms about the way in which we're doing it. And as we continue to firebomb Japanese cities during the spring and into the summer of 1945, Stimson extracts a promise from his deputy, Robert Lovett, the Assistant Secretary of War for Air, that we're going to stop this firebombing, or at least limit it. And Lovett says, basically, sure, sure, boss, and continues to do it. And Stimson is unhappy about this, and you would think as Secretary of War, he'd be powerful enough to affect it. But by now, the dogs of war are out, and it's hard to turn back. He's also 77 years old. He's got a heart condition. He's taking naps in the afternoon. He really doesn't almost have the physical power to stop what's going on. At the same time, he's worrying about the firebombing and the firebombing of Dresden, which just happened in Germany in February. He's worried about a much bigger bomb, the atom bomb. As Secretary of War, he's the chairman of the board of the project to create S-1, the atom bomb. And he's fearful that this is going to, even after we beat the Japanese, we're going to have a world order in which this thing is, he calls it the awful, the terrible, the diabolical, a Frankenstein monster that he's afraid is going to get out of control. So he's agonizing over that as well. And he can't sleep. He's, you know, he's been known as the New England conscience on legs, and he just can't sleep. And no wonder.
I'm struck by his relationship with two presidents immediately. Franklin Roosevelt, who leaves us in April, and Harry Truman, who comes into the office not adequately briefed about the burdens of what Henry Stimson is carrying around with him. I note that in your presentation, Henry Stimson was annoyed now and again about Franklin Roosevelt's ability to either deceive or avoid or bring forth falsehoods. And he was equally suspicious of Harry Truman. How did they regard him in their time in office? Was Stimson a bother and they sighed when he came to their office, or did they look to him for leadership?
It's complicated. Roosevelt brought Stimson in to, as a Republican, to help give him bipartisan support in 1940 for building up a war effort and ultimately to intervene. And Roosevelt didn't always follow Stimson's advice. For instance, Stimson wanted to, in his direct way, wanted to invade Europe right away, 1943. And Roosevelt, in his more dodgy but politically wise way, wanted to hold off. And that's also what Winston Churchill wanted to do. So Roosevelt does not always accept Stimson's advice, but they are of the same social class. This actually matters then, maybe now, but certainly then. They come from the same world of elite, wealthy, WASP, New England Protestants, and they relate to each other. They can talk to each other. They sang the same hymns together in chapel. Now, when Truman comes in, it's a little different. Truman ultimately comes to respect Stimson. He does, because Stimson is an upright and honorable man. But initially, Harry Truman is a Paul from Missouri, part of the Kansas City machine, the Pendergast machine, the corrupt machine. Truman himself was clean as a whistle, but Truman came from a world of politics that was far away from Henry Stimson. So initially, they don't really bond. There's a wariness between them. They have trouble talking to each other in a way that really relates.
It is the spring of 1945. There are big decisions to be made about ending the war in both Europe and the United States. But we're going to turn to what the biggest decision of all is, which Evan mentions is the atomic bomb. The code name for, there are various code names for it, but S1. And when we come back, what were they thinking, Harry Truman and his cabinet and Henry Stimson and his aides, McCloy and Lovett? What were they thinking about the S1 if it was going to work? The book is Road to Surrender, Three Men and the Countdown to the End of World War II. Evan Thomas is the author. I'm John Batchelor.